Fox Central. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintech studio. This hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. A fast lunch doesn't have to mean fast food. Satisfy your midday cravings by choosing a main side and drink for only $15 served in 20 minutes or less. And tomorrow, we will be on location at Boston Pizza in Abbotsford ahead of Abbotsford and Charlotte's Game 3 at the Abbotsford Center. So we'll be at Boston Pizza in Abbotsford from 3 to 5 tomorrow, and we'll get to watch a little bit of Game 6 in the Stanley Cup Final before heading over to the Abbotsford Center.
Then we'll mosey over to Abbey Center and watch the Abbotsford Canucks hopefully be victorious in Game 3 and the first ever Calder Cup Final game being played in Abbotsford.
Yeah, wasn't expecting a betting revenge game, but we got a betting revenge game on Sunday.
Yeah, it was Matthew Benning.
Michael Benning. Yes.
Not Matthew, Michael. So many Bennings.
There are quite a few Bennings. But yes.
The sports family, the Bennings.
They really are. We will be at the Abbotsford Boston Pizza tomorrow.
Are they even related?
I think he's his nephew, right?
Is he? Okay. Yeah. Michael Benning, yes.
He's his nephew, yeah.
Nephew of,
he's making
of Jim.
Jim's listening. He's like, oh, what did I do?
So we'll be at the Abbotsford Boston Pizza, 32530 South Fraser Way in Abbotsford. So we'll see you there tomorrow if you want to drop by.
One talks about the Bennings.
Him and Ben Hutton are listening right now. Like, what's happening?
Like, everyone talks about the lad. Like the Stalls, for instance, the Kachuk brothers.
Why not the Bennings? Yes.
Like the Sutters. The span generation, solely the Bennings.
He was, I think, a fourth round pick of the Florida Panthers a couple years ago. Michael Benning, and looks like a nifty little right shot defenseman, and scored the OT winner against Abbotsford the other night for Charlotte. We'll get into that a little bit more, but joining us now on the hotline, powered by Power West Industries, it is Frank Saravalli, and he is a presentation of Angry Otter Liquor. Thanks for this, Frank. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you guys?
We are. We're doing well. You know, the Stanley Cup Final is taking a lot of the center stage. Obviously, the Abbotsford Canucks taking some center stage here in the Lower Mainland as well with their run through the Calder Cup Finals. But we'll start with Florida dominating there in Game 5. And, you know, Brad Marchand, he's just won over everybody. You know, he went from the rat that everybody else hated outside of Boston to a guy that seemingly a lot of fan bases, fans of hockey, have kind of embraced here with the start of the Four Nations and what he's done with Florida. It's been an unbelievable fit, thinking about Brad Marchand with the Panthers and that trade deadline acquisition.
To be fair, I was compiling a list. Oh my God, this is such a confession of a hockey dork. I was laying in bed this morning before I got up, and I was thinking to myself, on the list of best trade deadline acquisitions ever, where would Brad Marchand fall if he's able to win the Conn Smythe Trophy? I mean, he'd have to go pretty high on the list. Like, I'm trying to think of the guys over the last few decades that would beat him, and I really can't come up with a great list. So, to me, the guy that everyone loves to hate, the guy who has shown that he has tons of game left at age 37, who's seemingly always right in the thick of it, getting his nose in it, but then also, you know, just heads up smart plays that are full of compete, winning battles off of face-offs and attention to detail. And he's the hockey player's hockey player is what I'd call him.
Well, and for sure. Go on. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I'm really torn as a Conn Smythe voter. Sam Bennett has had a phenomenal postseason and has led the postseason in goals and has put up a total that's, you know, rarely been touched in the last two decades. And yet, I'm kind of drawn toward Brad Marchand and the timeliness and importance of the goals that he scored.
No, I'm with you. Like, I don't have a vote, obviously. If I did, this would be one of the more difficult ones to vote for. Now, we'll see ultimately who ends up winning the Stanley Cup. But not to get too ahead of ourselves, but I mean, free agency is literally days away at this stage. But what is this doing to Brad Marchand's market? And what could he be commanding here on a 2 or 3 year term, or however long he wants to play?
it's been put on steroids. I mean, we're talking about a guy who is obviously showing no signs of slowing down. And to me, if you were thinking originally 3 years times $6 million a year, my guess is that it's probably something like 3 times 8, and someone might have to stretch into the fourth year in order to retain his services. And I don't think the notion that's existed out there that, oh, Brad Marchand is simply just going to be going to the highest bidder. There's no doubt at this point in his career for a guy who has been as impactful as he has, but his career earnings aren't as high as some others that are in the same category of player, which is likely Hall of Fame bound, that he's going to be trying to catch up on some cash. But I don't think at the same time he's going to turn around and say, oh, hey, San Jose Sharks or Chicago Blackhawks, I'm in. Let's go for the next 3 to 4 years. I doubt that that's part of his thought process.
But could you not see a team like the Leafs just be like, if they lose one, if, or they are, maybe we can talk about Marner, but can they gave Tanev that 6-year deal? Did they give him a 4-year deal at 7.5, 8?
Well, maybe they try and, make it 5 years and push the AAV down a bit more. I don't know. But I would think that he would be a candidate there for sure. And I guess if you're Marchand, you have all the confidence in the world potentially coming off of a second career Stanley Cup to say, hey, I've knocked this team out 5 years now in my career. 5 of the 9 times that Austin Matthews has made to the playoffs. I'm someone that can, be the guy that turns this ship around. Maybe he's exactly the type of person that would have the headspace to do that.
I was thinking Ray Bourque is the trade deadline acquisition, but he didn't win in that first year with Colorado. It was the second year in Colorado that they had won. Marian Hossa, same kind of thing with Pittsburgh. Like, they didn't end up winning, but he was incredible for the Penguins in that 08 run, I guess it was. It's a short list. Like, Marchand is definitely one of the best pickups we've seen in trade deadline history.
And,
by the way,
not for a first-round pick either, which is amazing. Not to rub it in for the Bruins, but... Yeah. I mean, he eventually became a first-round pick, but not off the hop.
Yeah, and people keep having the conversation, well, how did Florida build such a juggernaut? How did they get better after winning the Stanley Cup? Well, I mean, having the extra LTIR space with Matthew Tkachuk hurt really helped them get Seth Jones and Brad Marchand, right?
It would have been impossible without that, that's for sure. But that said, like, you heard Matthew Tkachuk talk today. He said that the first round was definitely the most painful for him as he's gutted it out. And for as much as people have talked, by the way, throughout this postseason about how Matthew Tkachuk hasn't been nearly as impactful and is playing through injury, he's hit exactly a point per game in 22 games.
Yeah. He's still been really good. I don't think anybody's like, not to bring it up, but nobody's questioning Matthew Tkachuk's injury in this case, right? It's not like the Nikita Kucherov one. That's why I don't think the LTIR conversation is as prominent during this Florida Panthers run as it has been in some other teams' run through the Stanley Cup playoffs. So
he also got aided by the Aaron Ekblad
suspension.
PED suspension. Yeah, because at that point, believe it or not, they actually had enough cap space to activate Matthew Tkachuk with games left in the regular season. And would have been cap compliant, and he just wasn't ready.
Frank Saravalli, our guest here on Canucks Central. So game six of the Stanley Cup Final going tomorrow. You'll hear it on Sportsnet 650. So free agency, hinted at Mitch Marner, and he's going to be the big fish on free agency. It feels like we might have one of those situations like, I guess, Brad Marchand, or even when Tavares was going through free agency, where he's going to set up shop and teams are going to present their presentations and their offers. Is that what we're heading towards here with Mitch Marner?
That's what it sounds like, that this is going to be a pretty methodical process. I'm not sure if you guys saw the statement from his group that his charity event for July in Toronto, his annual event, has been canceled because of the, quote, uncertainty in his schedule.
Yeah.
I thought that was an interesting development as well. It's going to be interesting to watch this play out because, yes, teams have cap space. Yes, teams want to be aggressive and want to go after Mitch Marner. There's no doubt. It's rare that a player of that age and that impact, 100-point player, plays a pretty conscientious two-way game, becomes available. But I think in some ways, the market might be a little bit more limited than anyone wants to really let on. I mean, honestly, how many more teams than five are authentically going to be in the mix? And are those teams willing, at the same time they're pitching, to have left their powder dry completely, given how expensive he's going to be, to any other needs, wants, or wishes during the free agent period in order just to try and get him?
And that's why ultimately, you know, we'll see how it all kind of shakes out there. But considering how much money he wants, unless he's willing to go short term, does that kind of change the equation?
Well, yes and no, because just because the term is shorter, you're still buying all UFA years.
Yeah.
And with a 100-point season, he's still going to be commanding a really significant AAV. So if it's shorter, I don't know how much of a discount a team is going to be getting versus an 8-year deal.
Yeah, and Marner just doesn't feel like a guy that's ready to take any kind of a discount. He's looking to get that home run. And a lot of the teams that seem to be interested, Vegas, you know, they're sort of cap limited to a certain extent, depending on what happens with Alex Pietrangelo has been rumored. It just feels like, you know, the teams Marner might want to go to, not all of them have the cap space that he desires to get the big payday maybe he's looking for.
I agree. And I think Vegas is a fascinating case that you mentioned. To me, they'd be the team that I'd be most keyed in on as, I don't want to say the front runner, but a team that has the want to do it. But they've got other limitations, as you can see on their current roster. So are they going to have something keyed up, ready to pull the trigger on? Does it involve Pietrangelo and an LTIR stint? Will he be ready to start the season? And beyond that, just putting him on LTIR to start the season wouldn't even be enough. You'd have to be moving out other pieces. So are you really willing to blow up a chunk of your roster when you may or may not get the guy? Or do you just address that situation after the fact?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and one team we're keeping a very close eye on is the Buffalo Sabres, because they have so many players that are of interest for a lot of different teams. Obviously, J.J. Paterka is a player. Bowen Byron's name keeps being linked to Vancouver. The Canucks are pretty much set on D, but what do you make of the continued links to Vancouver for Bowen Byron and the Sabres?
Yeah, I would say you could probably add J.J. Paterka's name to that list as well. I'd be surprised if the Canucks haven't called.
Yeah.
It's not going to solve their 2C problem, but
a higher end player, right?
Be a higher end younger player that could certainly aid in helping this team score, which I think is standing out right now as likely one of the struggles moving into next season. That said, I'm not alone in saying this, because I think the Canucks are similar to so many other teams. How do you become a trade partner that's viable for Buffalo? What are you giving up that's getting Buffalo excited for right now? Because they haven't been focused on futures. And unlike some other teams where you might be able to entice them with a super high pick, you know, picking 3 or 4 in the top 5, it's a little bit more difficult for Vancouver to put together a package, I think, that really gets Buffalo excited.
Yeah, and I know a lot of our listeners ask about offer sheets, and it's been a buzz term over the last number of years. But also, given what happened last summer, people are wondering if Paterka or even Byram could be some players that are targeted with offer sheets. But to me, that doesn't make sense for the player, because you risk the chance that Buffalo just matches it, and then you're stuck in Buffalo. And if you want out, that doesn't fill your end goal.
Well, it depends on what the offer sheet is.
Yeah.
I mean,
it would have to be pretty expensive.
I think it's going to be really difficult to design something for Byram that Buffalo wouldn't match.
Mm-hmm.
because you listen to the thought process and it seems to be quite expensive already from Byram's camp in talks with the Sabres. And then with Paterka, obviously it would be a much bigger bet on immediately getting to a high threshold and might even be a short-term or shorter-term deal that would make sense. Like, I put together my list of offer sheet candidates last week, and Byram wasn't on there because it's tough to design one, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But with Paterka, the Sabres know they're dealing with a player who doesn't want to be there, and they're in a spot where they don't pay out signing bonus. So if you did a two-year deal at that $9.7 million AAV threshold that avoids getting into the next highest level, can you structure it in a way where for both of those seasons he's only getting league minimum salary and the rest of it in signing bonus? So it's essentially like $16 million in real cash over a 365-day period of time,
mm-hmm.
that might put Buffalo in a spot where they say, we just don't want to dip into our reserves in order to make that happen.
Yeah, if the financial aspect's a big consideration, there are ways to make it really difficult, right? And I wonder on Byram, has his value diminished at all? Because he hasn't really hit the heights that people had hoped to see from him, especially after getting traded.
I mean, the true answer to that is yes and no. It's probably not as high as it used to be, but the truth is, to get your hands on a defenseman who has legitimate 60-point upside, I think, and has already put together a double-digit goal-scoring year, has won a Stanley Cup, and has done all of that by the age of 24. He turned 24 over the weekend. Another guy that's really difficult to get your hands on. And, like, to me, I look at that and go, he's, I think probably, yes, there's some injury history there, a lot of things to consider, but I wouldn't really go by his most recent season and a quarter in Buffalo.
It is interesting with Byram, such a talented player entering the prime of his career. You don't see defensemen like that get traded very often. On the Canucks end, you mentioned that they've at least probably called Buffalo on some of these options. The player that they've probably been connected to most so far this offseason is Marco Rossi from the Minnesota Wilds. What are you hearing on the Canucks we know they're going to be a player. We're just not sure what that is going to be for yet.
Yeah, and that kind of goes back to the comments that I made right off the hop this offseason when Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin addressed the media at Locker Cleanout Day, which is this team is trying to thread the needle. They've got a wish list that they're hoping to pull off in a playbook that's probably pretty long, but I'd say in a lot of ways, being able to get from one end of the playbook to the other, is the odds are probably stacked against them, and that they made it really clear trying to reset expectations in your market that next season might be painful. Now, if they can thread the needle, it might not be. And you've got the excitement of a new coach, and you've got someone that's going to do things just a little bit differently. And you've got this hope of Pettersson rebounding after a big summer. A lot of ifs, maybes, and hopes and dreams. And that is exciting. And also, if you're a Canucks fan, probably pretty terrifying. But I think Marco Rossi is definitely on the list of names that Vancouver is interested in. But like so many other teams, one of the concerns is, what's it like acquiring an undersized but clearly talented center,
mm-hmm.
when we've got a guy in Pettersson who already plays rather meek? How much does adding Marco Rossi with 60-point or 75-point potential really move the needle for our team when we need to be a lot more difficult to play against?
It seems like people want to be opportunistic with Marco Rossi as opposed to paying anywhere near close to the price the Minnesota Wild want, which puts Bill Guerin in a pretty tough spot, it seems.
Well, yes and no, because he's still got a salary cap structure to live in, and he's made it relatively clear that he's not going to be meeting Marco Rossi's price as a restricted free agent. I think their camp is looking for something as a 60-point player, much closer to $7 million AAV, and that's not something that the Wild are willing to pay someone who they see in an ideal spot as a 3C, not a 2C. So it's he also has to make a decision. Are we going to play hardball with this guy and bring him back for one more year, take a different path? Or do we just bite the bullet, get what we can get, and also use the opportunity cost of not having to lock in with that player that we might ultimately not see as a fit long term right in the here and now?
Question I get asked a lot from listeners and Canucks fans is like, well, why don't they just bring back Suter? And, you know, you look at the projections and it's looking at like $5 million. He's maybe the fourth best center on the market going into free agency. It's do you still like Pugh Suter if he's going to make $5 million bucks a year? And then, you know, a lot of you start seeing frowns and eyebrows raise and people are like, well, maybe not so much. And I think that's sort of the predicament the Canucks find themselves in, because, yeah, you'd love to bring back Pugh Suter, but, you know, he's still a third line center, best profiled as a third line center, not the second line center they need.
And he just turned 29.
Yeah.
And how much term are you giving him? And how likely is it that he reverts back to the really consistent 14 to 15 goal scorer that he's previously been, as you mentioned it, way more of a 3C?
Yeah.
Like, on a really good team, Pugh Suter is not playing 17 and a half minutes a night. He just isn't. I love all the aspects of his game, attention to detail, all those things, but he had a massive year that I think the Canucks have demonstrated time and time again under this regime, is that they aren't going to pay for one season, one moment in time. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't do it with Bo Horvat. They aren't doing it with Brock Besser, and I don't think they're going to be doing it with Pugh Suter.
Well, and you brought up Brock Besser. I guess anything is possible, but it really looks like it's just not going to happen with him in Vancouver. Like, is the only scenario one where he goes to free agency and the offers aren't where he expected them to be? But has that door pretty much closed with Vancouver?
I think it's pretty well closed, yes.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel like...
If you want a twist in the storyline, what if Brock Besser ended up in Boston with some other recent Vancouver Canucks?
Nikita Zadorov and Elias Lindholm signed there last year, yeah.
It wouldn't shock me. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if he ends up there. It wouldn't shock me if he ends up on the Rangers, if they clear more space. Wouldn't shock me if Ottawa wants him. Like, it wouldn't shock me if some former Canuck ties are something we're talking about ultimately wherever he ends up.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's a fit in Philly, but
yeah,
I'm sure Rick Tocchet is probably thinking at some point about some of the Canucks connections that he's had in Van as well.
Sat just mentioned the Rangers. They moved out Kreider last week. Are they trying to move out more right now, you think?
I think Chris Drury's open to anything, but I think some of the reporting that's been out there about Mika Zibanejad has been incorrect. His wife had a lengthy post today on Instagram about how no one seems to have any correct sourcing, that Mike Sullivan just flew over from New York to meet with them in Sweden. Doesn't sound like a team that would be investing in trading that player. And besides, he's got the full no move, no trade. Like, he holds all the cards. He doesn't want to go anywhere. And the Rangers, there's nothing they can do about that one. Chris Kreider had switched to a 15-team no trade. That means half the league is you're able to send him without any issue at all. This is totally different.
Before we let you go, on the Alexis Lafreniere front, is he pretty much staying in New York, or is there a way that somebody could entice Drury to move off the former first overall pick?
Oh, there's a way that someone could entice, for sure. Again, when I say that Chris Drury is open to just about anything, I mean that in all sincerity and authenticity. That said, you'd have to be a really big believer in Alexis Lafreniere to think that you're going to find surplus value in that contract as it continues to age, because the Rangers made a bet. They paid a high premium. Speaking of what we were just talking about with one season, one moment in time. And yes, last year was a down year for almost everyone in New York, but the way that his play dropped off after a nice start to the season and getting that contract signed, I think that would have certainly raised a few eyebrows around the league to say that I think at least for the relative near future, he's going to be one of the more difficult guys on the team to move.
Frank, we always appreciate the time. Thanks for this.
Thanks, guys. Have a good week.
There is Frank Saravalli joining us here on SportsCent 650 on the hotline, powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on. And Frank, a presentation of Angry Otter Liquor. And, of course, members of the Plus program save more at Angry Otter Liquor. This month, save extra on Neutral Vodka Soda and Hey Y'all 12-packs. Find more at Angry Otter Liquor.
Justin in East Van says, Canuck Central is following the lead of the U.S. Open playing pre-recorded content. Mm. Now, I mean, the pre-recorded content doesn't mean it's less work for us. Like, we're recording before the show, like, yes, right before. It's still doing the work. Like, we're not mailing it in.
We're just accommodating guest schedules.
Yeah, that's all it is.
And yesterday, we were just watching Tiger Woods, and it was awesome.
Yes.
Who doesn't love that? There was a few moments during the U.S. Open over the weekend where I was like, man, I really do miss Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
At any point,
but it was still entertaining. At any point over the weekend watching the golf, did you feel like this is so difficult, I would never want to play this?
Oh, course. I would never want to play. I wouldn't break 150 from the front tees. Okay.
Or would you look at it saying, like, you know what? Like, if I play super conservative, I could do okay.
No, I couldn't. No. Because if I miss the fairway, I'm never finding a ball. So it's like,
it would be fun. Would be fun.
I couldn't even imagine getting out of that rough.
Yeah, no, it looked terrible.
Yeah, it's brutal. Yeah. All right, coming up, the Open next on Canuck Central.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Vancouver sports fans. Halford and Brough in the morning. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.